It's Thursday, March the 9th, 2017. You are moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley and Shelley Fryer. Actually narrowcasting tonight from Edmond, Oklahoma. Well, good evening and welcome to the first podcast in a long time. I'm not sure when the last podcast I published on this channel was, but I think it's been a few months. So if you are not subscribed to the EdTech Situation Room, which you can find at edtechsr.com, follow on Twitter at edtechsr, please do, because virtually every week now I am doing a Wednesday night show, usually with Jason Neifer. Last night was with Miguel Gulen, and we are talking about current EdTech news or current technology news through an educational lens. But tonight I am in the car with my wife, Shelley. I'm sure there's hundreds of other people in Edmond tonight, honey, that are going to do a podcast, just like we are.
Well, absolutely. What else does anybody do while they're waiting on their daughter at dance class?
Yes, so we're waiting for our daughter, who is not yet driving by herself, and just the way that the evening worked out, we actually went to the gym. We've been going, trying to go twice a week. Some of us have been going twice, sometimes once, but anyway. It is the date night of sorts, but I have been wanting to get a podcast out. We've been talking about recording this for a long time, and here we are. So I'm going to ask Shelley a few questions, and I think at the end of this, I'll probably do a little reflection at the end as well by myself, but we have Shelley here. So Shelley, tell me what, for those people who don't know you.
Yeah, right.
What do you do? There's going to be people listening to this that don't know who you are. So who are you?
I'm very interesting. I'm Shelley Fryer. I'm a third and fourth grade teacher at a school called Positive Tomorrows, in Oklahoma City. We are a private nonprofit school, for homeless children. And so we are one-to-one iPad school. We have iPad 2s, which have been working great for us, but as all the new operating systems and the new apps are coming out, anyway, I have some mild concerns about, you know, what that's going to look like. So, but anyway,
Fourth year of iPad one-to-one, right?
Fourth year. That's right. Yeah. Fourth year.
And you're a Seesaw ambassador.
I am a new Seesaw ambassador. I'm very excited about it. I, you know, have been dabbling with Seesaw for the past 3 years, I guess, right after it first came out. And it was a real game changer for my classroom, for sure.
What is Seesaw for people?
Well, Seesaw is a digital learning journal for students. It's a place where students can put their work and show and share their classmates, and it connects to parents. And so teachers can, you know, keep the parents informed about what their students are doing in the classroom. I am amazed. Since becoming an ambassador, I joined the Seesaw teacher group on Facebook. I've always used Facebook for just personal things, keeping up with high school classmates and things like that.
Oh, lots of high school classmates.
Oh, tons of them. So anyway, I have learned so much from the Seesaw teacher group, and I love it because, it's a lot of newbies, you know, a lot of people asking some really great questions, and then a lot of comments, and, you know, a lot of experienced teachers out there helping them through, you know, the first phases of really getting started. And man, there are some amazingly creative teachers out there doing just some really cool things, using Seesaw. And so it's really kind of upped my game and challenged me to do some new things with Seesaw. But anyway, it became a real game changer for me because we were creating a lot of digital content and wanted to share it, you know, with each other and share it outside of our classroom. And I had a classroom YouTube channel and a Flickr site and, I mean, all these different places, kid blog, all these different places to put things. But Seesaw, has been wonderful because I can put all of our digital media right inside their portfolios. I can load our podcast in there for the students to listen to. We just finished a big Black History project, and so all of their book creator projects went into their portfolio. Anyway, it's been really transformative in my classroom, and so I've enjoyed learning from others and being challenged to up my game a little bit.
Okay, so I want to ask you about those Black History projects and the ebook projects. I want to ask you about EdCamp, and I want to ask you about just your classroom overall, as far as how that's been, because it's been a real different year for you this year. But first, what is a specific example of something that you have learned to do with Seesaw, where you've been inspired by that group? Can you think of anything, you know, new that you've learned in the last couple weeks? Because you, oh, and we got to talk workshops, because you've been doing a bunch of workshops for Oklahoma A Plus and Seesaw. Is anything spring to mind that's been, were you doing that thing where you,
well, I watched the, I love how Seesaw does their PJ and pajama, or PD and PJs, or, yeah. I probably should know what the
PD
official
in your PJs.
Yeah, there you go. And literally I was sitting on the couch, was it yesterday morning, watching a PD in my pajamas, drinking my coffee. I think my favorite so far has been Sylvia Duckworth's, that I just watched recently, and I've not really, yes, sketchnoting. I've not really dabbled in that very much. I know you have, hun, but I haven't done a whole lot of that. So I was watching that so that I could learn more. I'm really intrigued. A lot of teachers are, doing a lot of really unique word work and, with Seesaw, where, especially using the label tool. I think everybody has just really absolutely love the label tool in Seesaw, and it's been really fun to watch all the creative things that people are doing with that labeling.
Well, just that example you showed me about arrays the other day. So I haven't able to visit your room that much, but I was downtown having to pick up some equipment for our for technology, and anyway, got to just drop in and say hi, and you were on the floor, you know, teaching with manipulatives and color tiles, you know, arrays to your kids. And then you had them do this lesson, and you showed me several of the Seesaw projects they did. And they were using emojis as well as text and audio, right?
Sure. I'm a firm believer in definitely spending time with the concrete and developing the concept. Most of my students this year are third graders. I have maybe 3 fourth graders in my classroom this year. So most of them are third graders, and we're really having to start with the concrete. We've just, you know, been doing multiplication. And definitely working with arrays and talking about rows and columns. And so we had the tiles out, and we were modeling that with our tiles. And then I was really trying to teach, or making them aware of, the commutative property, you know, that 4 times 5 is the same as 5 times 4. And so that's what we were kind of focusing on. And so I'd seen a lot of teachers making these worksheets, you know, inside Seesaw. And so I formed a worksheet, and then they had to go in and model, you know, create models of 4 times 5 and 5 times 4. And then, they did that with emojis, and then they used the, explain feature so that you can record and draw at the same time. So they were able to explain their thinking by drawing and creating their own little whiteboard explanations. And, that was just awesome. I mean, it's really neat because you can tell definitely who is truly understanding the concept, and who is not. And so that gave me a real clue as to who I needed to go back and reteach with.
And didn't you say you were surprised?
I was surprised. I mean, I really thought, and we'd been doing arrays for a long time, so we had kind of taken it up to the next step, you know, talking about the commutative property, getting them ready for the 6, 7s, 8s, and 9s multiplication facts, and some of them just really didn't get it.
But that came through on that assessment.
Most definitely.
Which is what you want an assessment to do, is to give you a window into their thinking and their abilities.
So I really like that, the term that A+, another group, and we can talk about that in just a minute, is enriched assessment. So really, having opportunities to do some enriched assessment, not just grading, but really digging into the minds of the students and, you know, even though they can build the arrays, listening to them explain their thinking, I was able to know who was really getting the concept and who wasn't.
Okay, so tell me what's been different this year about your kids, how you have adapted, and what your recent breakthrough was, probably within the last 2 weeks.
I think you mentioned earlier, this has been kind of a tough year, because—
Did you say this is your hardest year of teaching?
No, I don't think it's my hardest year of teaching. I think that was probably my first year. I think this year was challenging because it's been the most turnover. And, you know, when you're dealing with homeless students, it's just a natural, it's a given that you're going to lose and gain students. And this year, it just seems like it has happened a lot. I think out of my original 17 students that I started the year with, I have only 5 of those original students. And it seems like just about, I noticed, that this year my kids have just not caught on to the concept of this digital. You know, I've had other kids that pick up skills fairly quickly, but this group has just been a little bit slower on the uptake. And I think it's because we're always getting in losing students, and so I've forgotten who, well, yeah, you weren't here when we did that skill, and so I'm having to constantly reteach. Also, I have a lot of students that have ADD type issues, and you know,
and ADD is real, right?
Oh, ADD is so real. And then when you're working with our student population, a lot of times we also are very trauma informed. And when a student has experienced trauma in their life, it really masks itself as ADD. And, so a lot of my kids have had a lot of trauma this year, in their little lives.
But you had a breakthrough.
Yeah, I think, and so anyway, I'm really big, and I think what Wes is trying to allude to is, in my classroom community and building that classroom family, is very important to me, and that's been a lot harder to do this year. We did have a really big breakthrough, this year with Global School Play Day. You know, the Bedley brothers who are big advocates of that, and have, you know, introduced me to that concept, and we've participated in that for the last 2 years.
What is that for people who don't?
Well, Global School Play Day is a day. I mean, research will tell you, and we know that, you know, play is a child. That's the way they learn. And
it's
they
the work.
Need
it's
activities.
A
child's work. Yes. And they need activities to have unstructured play, you know, and, you know, play, whether it's playing outside or playing with games or creating their own things. And so, you know, having that time, and I think a lot of people are challenged to do that for an hour. We always do it for a whole day, and our whole school participates in it. And so it's just a day of total unstructured play. So, for me, my students a lot of times don't have toys, when you're living a mobile life and you don't have a room full of toys that, you know, you're not playing with. And so I like to bring, our kids toys from home, the toys they enjoy playing with when they were little. I've got some Star Wars, and the Millennium Falcon is always a huge hit, and My Little Pet Shops, and, you know, the, what's that other little doll that the girls would dress up, with that rubber, the rubber clothes. Polly Pockets. That's what it was. Polly Pockets. Anyway, and so I bring up a bunch of those, just toys, you know, and that activity this year was the turning point, in building our classroom family and our classroom community. And we do have a podcast. And if you go to our, classroom homepage, classroom.shellyfryer.com, there is a, one of our podcasts talks about that, about the things that they enjoy playing. And what you hear when you really listen closely is that the students had opportunities to build relationships with kids that they don't normally play with. And so they found themselves, you know, usually typically children will partner up with their friends and stick pretty tight to their friends. But on this day, they had the freedom, and they played with a lot of people they don't normally play with. And it just really solidified our classroom family. And ever since then, we've been a lot closer, and we've bonded. And, you know, in our morning meetings, we're sharing good news and bad news. And lately, there's been just a lot of bad news in their little lives. And, you know, but it gives us that foundation, and empathy. Goodness, empathy is so important, and such a hard thing, a concept for particularly 8 and 9 year olds to put themselves in somebody else's shoes. And that's something we do talk about a lot. So anyway,
So let's shift gears a little bit and talk workshops. You have done a lot of enriched assessment and Seesaw workshops, or what's ended up being a Seesaw workshop. So tell a little bit about Oklahoma A+, how you got into this, and then I'd love for you to share some of your observations, because you've been to a number of different, I mean, how many have you done? Have you done like 4 of these now?
Or I think 5? I've done more than that. I think maybe working on 5, and I have 2 more scheduled.
Okay.
Well, A+, our A+ network is arts integration. So it's integrating the arts, music, visual arts, dance, music, and integrating those art skills into curricular areas, working, because we know that students are creative and, you know, the more modalities, you know, and they have different things that they're interested in. And so, we work a lot with other educators, trying to.
It's a statewide network where you have training and usually an entire campus.
But it's not just Oklahoma State. I mean,
it's in other places. Yeah. I think it just came out of North Carolina.
Yeah.
But it's Oklahoma A+.
So, anyway, so it's truly arts integration. It's not teaching an art lesson just for the sake of teaching an art lesson, but it's teaching an art lesson in your social studies class and integrating those two skills together, you know, through vocabulary and activities and
not just being fluffy, but really
no, there's a
standards.
Big difference between arts enhancing, and there's arts integration. And A+ is a big proponent of integrating those art skills into the curricular areas. And one of the strands that we have is called enriched assessment, and it has just blended beautifully with Seesaw, because Seesaw is an assessment tool. You know, not only is it a place where students can put their work that they're proud of, and a place where teachers can, you know, turn in work and have kind of a flipped classroom, but also it is just the best place to get authentic assessment, enriched assessment, and really get into the minds of students. When students have the capability to record their voice and to draw and explain their thinking, and we find that definitely using Seesaw that we're getting a higher quality of work from students when they know that it's authentic and somebody's going to see it and somebody actually cares about it, and that's something that they're going to be proud of. And so just that whole student engagement is better, and the quality of the assignment comes in, and that's just better. So I've been able to introduce to several schools in our area in Oklahoma City, and one in Enid, Oklahoma, from, you know, preschool, I presented Seesaw and enriched assessment and STEM activities, with a preschool, school in Enid, you know, all the way through, I think, a week from Monday, I've got a group of middle school teachers, and, I mean, it's been a really awesome opportunity.
What have you observed in terms of the differences between schools, teachers, and devices and situations?
You know, I think one thing, you know, again, A+ talks about is this triple track and kind of taking teachers where they are and then taking them where they want to go. And, you know, everybody has a different entry point, just like students do. And I find that teachers' entry points vary. And it really, you can walk into a school, and anybody that is an educator knows when you walk into a school of really engaged teachers who are really excited about learning more. And then when you walk into a school where everybody is, feeling tired and overworked and maybe not as enthusiastic, I find is, especially in regards to technology, I think in Oklahoma City, they're still, slowly building in technology, and there's a lot of different platforms. Thanks to Donors Choose, a lot of teachers are getting equipment, but they can't necessarily, use it efficiently in the classroom because it's
well, let's
not
just
a,
say it. Oklahoma yeah. City does not allow teachers right now, and this has got to change. They do not allow Donors Choose iPads or Chromebooks or whatever to be connected to the network at school.
That's definitely challenging,
and that's something we Yeah. Hope to advocate.
Plus,
to
Wi-Fi
change.
Connections aren't always equal. And you know what? I know that Oklahoma City has a great technology department, and I know it's got to be incredibly challenging with as many schools and infrastructure that we have. And so I can't even imagine the scope of that. What I do see sometimes though is carts of iPads that are still not being used. I think this would be my biggest takeaway. I think putting the iPads into the hands of the students and the teachers is imperative. When you stick an iPad in a cart, it's almost like it's entombed in there. I think people think that you have to have a one-to-one situation. You absolutely do not have to. I know many teachers that are sharing iPads, but I would much rather have two iPads in my classroom that are mine to work with students at a center than to have a cart of iPads once every couple of weeks.
Well, I say it this way. Communism doesn't work very well. Yeah. You know, just sharing those devices versus ownership. You know, your ability to feel comfortable using it and be able to just make it your own.
And I still see a big fear factor. People think they're going to break it, or people think it's going to be hard. This is a case in point. We've been doing Seesaw in our school, and every teacher has had it, and most of them are still at the very basic level. But,
that's your daughter.
Yes.
And she probably doesn't see us down here.
Here, you hold this and you keep talking.
Okay. Go get her. Oh, goodness. He's leaving me alone with this. Where was I? I was thinking about the technology. Oh, okay. I was going to tell you a story about our kindergarten teacher. And she did these really adorable George Washington Carver projects, you know, crafts with her kids. And I said, hey, I've got an app. It's called ChatterPix that will just, you know, let me show you how simple this is. And so, you know, I showed her ChatterPix and how simple it was. And I said, and you can take this project that you made out of construction paper and add this mouth to it, and it'll talk. And then you can have your kids record their voices. And, you know, she was kind of overwhelmed, but she tried it. And then I said, once you do that, you can save it to your camera roll and then put it in the Seesaw, which she's been doing. And so anyway, she did it with her students and saw how easy it really was. But, you know, in her mind, I think sometimes teachers think digital equals being difficult. And it's not, especially when you have some place to put it like Seesaw.
Awesome. See, you did good by yourself there. All right, well, we'll have a little road noise here as Dad is driving back, but Mom will be doing the talking, so this will be very safe. So any different? You want to talk a little bit? We've started a website called Design Create Share. So designcreateshare.org. And one of the things that I've enjoyed doing the last 4 years with iPad Media Camp is basically using a Google site to have the curriculum there and the links and everything, so that people can always go back to it and everything's openly accessible. So any thoughts about how you're approaching these enriched assessment workshops? Sir, can you close that window, please? How are you going to approach this differently as you have these next two?
I don't think I'm going to approach it differently. I think what I've been trying to do, especially when I'm talking to teachers the very first time about digital portfolios, is that this is not just another thing. This is not just the latest fad. You know, this is a way to truly, you don't have to throw out everything that you've already done. Teachers are already creating awesome lessons and awesome activities, and you don't have to change anything about that. They can continue to teach the same gingerbread lesson that they've always taught before, but this is a way to integrate authentically the digital.
And it's adding the sharing, right? Because they may be doing it and the kids creating it, but they wouldn't necessarily be sharing it digitally, sharing it inside the classroom, and sharing it outside.
Yes, and that's what I love about Seesaw and the platform that it allows us to do that. So that, you know, especially for teachers who are just getting started using the technology in their classroom. And another awesome thing is, I know I'm challenged, like a lot of teachers have Chromebooks with little kids. I mean, like first and second graders. And And they don't think anything about it. The kids, they just teach them how to do it, and the kids do it, and, you know. So I'm challenged. Like, I've only done Seesaw and done this creating and making on an iPad, which I love because I love app smashing. But I really need to practice using it with my Chromebook. I use it on a lot of devices. I have a Chromebook, and on my desktop at work, and then on my phone and on my iPad. But I've never really done it from the student's point of view on a Chromebook, and that's my next step.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about EdCamp. So last weekend, Saturday, was EdCamp OKC, our fifth annual EdCamp, and I was thrilled to, I think it was the best EdCamp we've ever had. We simplified things, and we're going to do some debriefs as an organizer team. But Shelly wasn't involved in an organizer. You were involved as a participant, and I don't know if this was your third or fourth EdCamp or whatever, but talk a little bit about how it went and what happened and how was the learning for you.
Well, you would think, because I often listen to the organizers meeting because it was like every Tuesday for the past 2 months, and so I listen in on it quite frequently. I evidently don't get the concept of the workshops yet. I think I do now. You know, when I first started going to ed camps, I think Wes, you know, brought me kicking and screaming. And felt very, out of place with technology. This is my journey. And so, but I always love to sit in and listen to people's ideas and then try them out later. And so I found EdCamps very beneficial. But I also felt like when I was a beginner, it felt like a very high bar.
Write something up on the board.
To just put your name up there. So I didn't really realize that when you put your name up there, you're like volunteering to
talk. So for people that don't know, EdCamp is a wonderful movement for professional development. They usually happen on Saturdays. They're free. Absolutely. They, almost always happen in schools. We have ours in area high schools. We alternate between being in the Oklahoma City public schools and then being in one of our surrounding suburbs. And so, first year was UConn. Then we came to Oklahoma City to Grant High School. We went down to Moore, Oklahoma, for year three. Last year we were back in Oklahoma City at, John Marshall High School. And then this year we were out at Mindell at Dell City High School. Which is just east of town, right by Tinker Air Force Base. And so, anyway, EdCamp is a unconference, and it means that we do not plan what the sessions are before. We set up rooms, and we are there's different ways people organize the sessions, and we have really stayed to this ethic of put the butcher paper, put the signs up on the wall. You have your schedule, and we do four different sessions, and then we mix in, you know, having some an app smackdown after lunch and some giveaways. We had amazing giveaways this year. We gave away 5 iPad minis, 2 Chromebooks, $350 in gift cards from Amazon and from Best Buy. And anyway, it was really good. But we stick to this idea of putting the paper up and letting people write their names up, with the guidelines that vendors are not permitted to, you know, have a session and just talk about their product, and that this isn't about, it's supposed to not be about, it always happens that somebody does, but it's not supposed to be one person talking. It's supposed to be a conversation that's facilitated.
And it's very difficult when your wife puts her name down for all the workshops, especially in one strand.
Right, So Shelly ended up putting her name down a couple times in the same session, but it worked out. Like, there was one where I think
I have a husband that can do a lot of many different things.
Well, there was one, I think it was after lunch, Shelly put her name down on one called Multimedia Classroom, and then there was one called iPads in STEM. And so, anyway, she went to the iPads in STEM, and I went to the Multimedia Classroom, and that worked out. So, what did you take away from EdCamp this year? And, what do you think you're going to be, you know, using and doing? How did this play into your journey of learning as an educator and a technology user?
Well, I think this is the year, like, I really kind of felt, like Tanya Gaunt and I, we just connected. We went to almost everyone, didn't plan it that way.
You went to the same sessions?
Yeah, we went to the same sessions. And of course, She's in Clinton, right?
She's a Clinton. Is she in the? She's a technology integrator, isn't she?
Yeah, but she's with early childhood. Yeah. So anyway, we just loved working together, and she absolutely loves Seesaw and is a Seesaw ambassador as well. And so we had a great time. In fact, it was almost to the point where you really just have to calm down, and you know, we love Seesaw so much that you can almost scare somebody away by your enthusiasm. And of course, we love sharing the awesome things that our students are doing in the classroom. And so, and then I let her put up her Seesaw join code.
She got all the credit. By the way, we'll have to tell Peggy George, but if Peggy George is listening to this, we'll have to tell her separately. Tanya Gaunt would be a fantastic Classroom 2.0 featured teacher. So we'll have to nominate her to be a featured teacher.
Yes. So anyway, but I really connected with her. I've known Tanya and I've met Tanya, but I really feel like I connected with her this year. And I think that's what's really awesome about doing an ed camp over and over again in the same area, because even though you don't teach together, I mean, you form these relationships, and really that's, you know, ed camp is meant to connect teachers and to become a connected educator and to be able to share what you're doing with your students in the classroom. So it is not about selling a program, but it's really about talking about ideas and sharing ideas. And I love, this year we had so many Edmond teachers as well, and I really loved...
Edmond is the community where we go to church, but it's north of town, and our kids were there for elementary, and it's exciting to see so many Edmond teachers participating, because that's... I think early on we didn't see a lot of Edmond teachers in ed camp, and now we totally did.
Yeah, so that, I thought that was really wonderful. So anyway, really enjoyed my ed camp experience this year, and I think I've learned my lesson to be very careful about where I put my name and not sign up for too many sessions. But I mean, I did go into it with the idea of being a facilitator, you know, and I do think that that is really important to make sure that when you are a facilitator, to try to get everybody's participation.
So, I want to ask you about your Black History projects. You have just finished another year of Black History projects, ebooks, book creator, and you're pretty excited about your kids finishing. So, talk a little bit about, and I don't know that I got you to share, you have had to really, you know, alter and adapt your teaching when it comes to technology this year with the students you've had. So how has that played out with the Black History projects this year?
Yes, I have many students that have a difficult time with multi-step activities. And I have many students that don't do really well with direct instruction. And so I have to make sure that I'm giving very clear and concise, like I had to come up with a checklist and we work on this project for a long time. This is a month and 2 week project this year. Usually it just takes me a month. We were a little slower this year. But we'd go through the whole research project and we look at a lot of examples and we learn the skills and bits and pieces and,
Tell some specifics about like who your kids did, because that was, I was asking you tonight.
Oh.
Like how did your kids find these people to talk about?
Well, I mean, we always start, biography.com. I mean, bio.com just does a super job of assembling, you know, Black history. And I never like to focus. I mean, we started with slavery and then we went into, Civil Rights Movement. And then we kind of end up at the end where we actually identify and then research somebody. And we try to get it to a little more contemporary. It's not always contemporary, but we try to focus on scientists and dancers and artists and musicians. And so I give the kids a lot of choice.
And not all your kids are Black, too, right?
Well, yeah,
most of them are, but I'm just saying that too.
You're that not, doesn't make any bit of difference what color of the skin your students are.
No, it doesn't.
No, because it's valuable information. It is really important. But the kids get a lot of choice. That's one thing in my classroom. Students get a lot of choice in how they do things. And so anyway, a lot of the students, we gave them a lot of examples and they got to, you know, those are a little more artsy, and we have a lot of students that are really into music this year and dancing. And so, usually it's all sports heroes, but this year we did have a couple of those. Oh gosh. One great project was Jackie Robinson. I really didn't know a lot about Jackie Robinson, but what an interesting guy. And Usain Bolt, who is like a world-class sprinter. He's from Jamaica. Let's see, Misty Copeland, who didn't start dancing until she was 13 years old and started at the Boys and Girls Club and, you know, was the first black prima ballerina and really broke the mold of their stereotypical dancer. Scientist, of course, George Washington Carver is always really popular. Louis Armstrong. It was interesting. A lot of my students, in doing their research, and they were required to do research from a book that we checked out from the library, from a web page that I selected for them and had the links for them to follow, and then from a video, and usually it came from the Biography Channel, but there are a lot of other great channels now for Black history and biographies. So, and then some of them were really challenging, like Linda Martell is a famous country western singer who is black and, but just outstanding. And there was one resource that I found, hillbilly.com, that gave a lot of great information. But that was really interesting. So anyway, the students have a lot of freedom to choose their, you know, who they're researching and go through the whole research process and collect their different resources and put together their bibliography. And, it seemed like it took us forever this year. But let me tell you, Book Creator, I am so impressed. We finally bought, we'd always just kind of...
The iPad app, Book Creator.
Oh, yes, the iPad app and then the comic strip stuff that they put in. I mean, talk about kicking it up a notch. And then the Read to Me feature that is new in Book Creator, which means, you know, you can play back and it'll highlight and read the text. I mean, you can always record the audio, you know, and the students always record the audio. And then when we save it as a video. The one thing I'm really, we've got to get more apps to share as EPUBs. I know that there's iBooks. But, you know, my students really enjoy the ebooks because we read a lot of ebooks. We use Mayan and we use Razkids and we use Epic and, you know, a lot of ebooks. And the kids really like turning the pages, you know, not just watching it as a video. But anyway, that's just me. But anyway, projects turned out awesome. We finally finished them up today. Tomorrow we're going to do our big author reveal and you know, show and share all of our projects.
All right, last thing I want to ask you about, Maker Studio. You're continuing to have a makerspace, and your kids love it, and you've talked about how I think you've in some ways been surprised at the level of engagement. Of course, it's been a little challenging with the hot glue guns this year.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk about that.
We don't want to talk about that. We had some major hot glue gun accidents, and suffice to say, we're not going to be using hot glue guns.
But talk about how you set up your maker studio, and I know in some of your workshops you've been working on STEM and, you know, trying, because it's not just having activities and stuff. It's also, I mean, maybe the main thing is how you set it up for the kids, what they do, your expectations, and then talk a little bit about just how your kids are in Maker Studio, because that's
well, how my kids have been in the last 4 years is not, I mean, this wasn't on the outline to talk about.
I know. Well, this is the end. We're just doing this quick.
Because
what I want to draw out is your level of engagement of your kids, your kids have loved making and creating. Like, that has been a flow experience? Like, they have just been...
Maker Studio is, you know, I do a lot of science through it. We do a lot of making and creating and design projects. This year, it hasn't been as formal, I would say, as it has in years past, mainly because my students just enjoy that time and that free time, to really make and create. And I can't tell you how much cardboard. We have an Eagle Scout, shout out to Christopher Hendy, who did his Eagle Scout project and built us some recyclable, places to put things. They're three. They're on casters. They have, they're see-through so that we can see. And so we have our recyclables, you know, divided into cardboard and, plastic and styrofoam. And so we have a great place that it's not just junking up our room anymore, but to go when we need. And we go through so much cardboard. But it's really great because, you know, everybody has recyclables, and so the students will bring in their recyclables, and we store them, and we make things out of them. We have a very generous donor that supplies us with whatever art supplies that we are using inside of our classroom. And so, you know, my kids use a lot of masking tape. They use a lot of duct tape. They're putting together, I think, the most recent creation was a pet condominium, and so it's three stories, and they were putting all kinds of gems and building all kinds of toys for the pets to play on and beds for them to sleep on. And and you know, one little girl had the idea and started building, and pretty soon you've got three or four little girls over there all building together and generating ideas. And I think that's why my students love it, is because it gives them a connecting point.
So last question, I'm the administrator saying, why should kids be involved in this kind of stuff? Shouldn't they just be studying their math, you know, facts and, you know, working on their writing and doing their phonics? What do you respond to that?
You know, I had a teacher ask me that at Ed Camp, actually. How do you justify that time? And I do justify it because we do a lot of science and math and STEM activities. But I think all of that aside, I think giving students the time to bond, to be creative, to use their imaginations, I think it definitely builds, collaboration skills. It builds responsibility. They have to clean up after themselves. They have to keep the materials organized. They have to, you know, one day the room was such a big mess that we spent the whole class period just picking it up, and it was awesome. We had vacuum cleaners going, and, you know, this is a space that the kids really love and enjoy, and so they're excited about keeping it clean. And, but it's for them, it's just really that time again where I think it's very valuable to give the kids choice, to give them power over their day, to give them, and this is the time that they enjoy the most.
Okay. Well, you have graciously answered so many questions. Where can people find you online if they would like to glean more pearls of wisdom from you?
Well, I have a blog, which is, I haven't blogged in a while, but it's shellyfryer.com. But it's a great place to get to know my other ideas and the things I'm doing in my classroom, and just some of my thoughts on, you know, whether it's teaching students of poverty or building classroom community, or just kind of thinking about integrating technology into our classroom and using the iPads. So that's shellyfryer.com. That's my blog. And then we have our classroom webpage, which is really our home base in our classroom, because we still use that quite a bit, especially on the desktop computers in our classroom. And it's classroom.shellyfryer.com. I'm at S. Fryer on Twitter. And I would highly encourage, if you're interested in Seesaw or using it, to follow the Seesaw Teacher Group on Facebook.
All right. Thanks so much. Well, hopefully the audio from that recording, even as we were driving back home, is not going to be horrible for you. I think that's probably a good enough show. That was about a 42-minute interview with Shelley, and I've definitely been wanting to get those reflections, be able to share those. And, you know, I'm very blessed to be married to Shelley and have a chance to hear on usually a daily basis, you know, these different stories about the classroom and her journey of learning as far as technology and just, you know, great tidbits of wisdom, from workshops she does and work she does with her teachers and all kinds of things. So I think I'm going to go ahead and sign off. There's more that I could say, but
I think that's probably good for now. Again, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, if you're not subscribed to the EdTech Situation Room, definitely encourage you to find that on iTunes or Stitcher. My favorite podcatcher is Pocket Casts, and so you should be able to search for EdTech Situation Room and find that, but the subscription links you can find in the sidebar of edtechsr.com as well. So hope that you are having a great school year if you are in the Northern Hemisphere as we are, and we are looking forward to an upcoming spring break and preparing at our school for a big arts festival that's coming up in April. There's going to be over 3,000 students and adults that will be descending upon our campus. And among other things, we are just hoping not to have any Oklahoma severe weather. But really, winter seems to have passed us by almost entirely this year. We did have a few cold snaps, but really not much winter to speak of. So who knows what will happen. But definitely am continuing to enjoy the opportunities to build relationships and work with so many great people at my school, Cassidy School, as the director of technology there, especially enjoying the work with Marsha Moore, who is our director of psychological services and is the co-chair of our digital citizenship team. And so we actually have met 21 times, the 22 times, I guess, counting this past week, and 23 maybe, because we met twice this week. So it's been a lot, you know, since September. Just tons of work on the strategic plan for digital citizenship. So I'll include links in the show notes to the different resources that Shelly mentioned, the workshop curricula that she's been using. I guess the one other thing, and I think I'm going to try to get this post. If I don't get it out tonight, I'll get it out tomorrow. I started this last week, when I had returned from a wonderful 2 days in the Dallas area visiting two schools, the Oak Ridge School, which had, the Lawson, if I'm saying that right, Learning, LLI, Learning. It was a fishbowl conference on Thursday where, different teachers taught lessons and we got to observe them, you know, with students and then debrief those. And then Friday we visited Parish Episcopal School, which is a very amazing, school in also the Dallas area. And, they really have some incredible makerspace engineering design areas. And so anyway, I'll get that post up and, that's a pretty extensive summary of learning points from that. But what a exciting day to be an educator. I must say that it's a bit depressing to turn the news and gosh, if you're an app developer, I'm sure there's probably no one who's reading this would actually do it, but I want a Trump filter on my Apple TV, you know, news apps. I love to use the Reuters news, Apple TV app, which will show you, you know, 10, 15, or 30 minutes of news, depending on how much time you have. But anyway, it is, it's a challenging time, and definitely it is in Oklahoma for schools. A post I've been thinking about for quite a while and have not penned is one that is about kind of the death spiral it seems like we're in for school funding in our state, because we're facing an almost $1 billion shortfall, I think $900 million shortfall, and, you know, it's just grim. We're 50th in the nation in teacher salaries. So I feel like we live on an oasis or an island, amidst a lot of just incredible challenges in public schools. And so, anyway, there's a lot to say there, and probably I've talked long enough, but it was definitely amazing to have the chance to work with so many wonderful educators from across Oklahoma at our EdCamp OKC event last week. And we will be doing some reflections later in the month, and I'll probably, you know, I'll write some posts and put some things up, and who knows, over spring break, maybe I will, be able to do some reflecting on that as well. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope that you will come back, tell others about Speed of Creativity podcasts, which are not nearly as frequent as some, but hopefully you will find the content here, you know, useful and maybe even inspirational. I know every time that my wife talks about what she's doing with her kids, I definitely have so much to learn and am inspired and edified by that kind of work, because it just affirms how important the work that we do each day. Whether we're in the classroom, we are administrators, we're parents, we have all these different hats, whatever our role is, we do important work. We're in the mission field in education. And so I thank you for the work that you do and the commitment that you have to professional learning and professional development, as represented by the fact that you've listened to the bitter end of this podcast. So good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it happens to be in your time. Until next time, stay safe and stay savvy. Bye-bye.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.